Welcome to Without Fear, Life, Death, and Everything in Between, a podcast for anyone ready to embrace life's ultimate truth. It ends. I'm Death Doula Alexis Hughes, here to break down barriers around mortality through heartfelt conversations, personal insights, and practical tools for facing the end with courage and intention. Whether you're curious about death, navigating grief, or seeking ways to live more fully, this is your safe space to explore life's most transformative topics. Together, we'll turn fear into understanding and silence into connection. My goodness, what a big day. This is my last podcast of this season, season one. We've been doing this for a year. I will take a short break and hopefully be back on the network ASAP. I've got some other irons in the fire, so be sure that you are keeping up with me on withoutfeardoula.com for my triumphant return, whenever that might be, and the things I've got going on in between. So last session, we were talking about the ones who look away, and we were talking about the disaster of the Titanic and some of the other ships that were at play, specifically the Californian, who saw the flares going off, had turned their Marconi machine off for the night and thought, oh man, looks like they're having a great time, and went to bed and woke up the next morning to the horror of what they had been able to kind of like bear witness to throughout the night. And there is something about the ocean at night that just makes everything feel bigger, scarier. The sky is endless. The water is endless. Everything is just black forever. If you've ever been on a cruise ship at night, there is a kind of existential dread I get going out there at night. I'm afraid of deep water anyway, so a cruise is kind of a special hell for me, especially at night. That darkness feels alive. And somewhere in that darkness on April 15th of 1912, hundreds of people were floating in the North Atlantic, freezing, crying out, clinging to splintered wood and overturned lifeboats. They were in that water, and the Titanic had gone down. But this episode isn't about the Titanic. It's about the ship that answered, the RMS Carpathia. So raise your hands if you've heard about the Titanic. Most of you. I'm seeing hands go up in my mind's eye. Now raise your hand if you've heard about the Carpathia, and it doesn't count if it's on TikTok. Probably a lot less of you. More importantly, what we're talking about the Carpathia tonight in our extended metaphor is what it's about when it means to become the kind of person that turns toward suffering instead of away from it. Last month, I talked about the Californian, how they saw the flares and they misread them. The ship that interpreted distress as celebration, or the ship that stayed still. That story matters because it's familiar. We miss things. We misunderstand signals. We assume someone else will respond. And sometimes we look away because we're uncomfortable. Sometimes we're tired. Sometimes because we genuinely don't realize what we're looking at. But this month, I want to sit with the opposite choice, because there was another ship. And when the Carpathia received the Titanic's distress call, everything changed. The Carpathia was arguably 60 to 70-ish miles away when the wireless operator received the message. It doesn't sound like much today. In a car, that's an hour-ish. In a plane, and that's nothing. But in 1912, in icy waters filled with debris and darkness and a minefield of icebergs, that was a dangerous distance. It was a moonless night, and it was dark and foggy. The Carpathia wasn't a massive luxury liner. A lot of people think that they were sister ships, the Titanic and the Carpathia. They were not. They were from competing lines. The Titanic was a White Star Line vessel. The Carpathia was an RMS vessel. Smaller, slower, built for steady passage, not speed. It was carrying its own passengers. It was not designed for rescue operations in freezing open water. It was an RMS vessel, meaning it was a Royal Mail ship, designed as a mail and cargo ship that just happened to also have passengers. But when Captain Arthur Ronstrom understood the seriousness of the message, he did not hesitate. He immediately ordered the ship turn around, and then he did something pretty extraordinary. He ordered every possible ounce of speed out of that ship. And when they say, "Well, we're going in the opposite direction, sir," he turned to his crew and he said, "Then we go north like hell." They shut off heating to conserve steam for the engines. They rerouted power. They instructed engineers to push the boilers beyond their normal limits. Some historical accounts suggest they exceeded the recommended pressure thresholds to squeeze out additional knots of speed. In other words, they stressed that ship. They risked damage. They risked mechanical failure. They risked their own lives and the rest of the lives of everyone else on that boat. They risked their own safety. The captain covered the speed gauge on the bridge with his hat so he wouldn't stare at it, worrying that they would get there too late. His engineers covered the pressure readouts in the engine room so they wouldn't know how much absolute danger they were in. She was meant to go 14 knots. She surpassed 17, arguably reaching 22. She melted one of her own boilers, and she never even reached 14 knots again when she was commissioned into service. Because something and someone else was in the water. They didn't debate whether it was their responsibility. They didn't calculate how inconvenient it would be. They did not wait for clearer confirmation. They just went. And as they moved, the crew and passengers prepared. They gathered blankets, they readied lifeboats, they cleared dining rooms, they set up makeshift medical stations, they brewed coffee, they made soup. They prepared for survivors before they could even see a single one of them. Passengers brought their bedding out of their cabins, their extra clothes, anything that they could lay hands on that might help these desperate souls. And I want you to notice that. They prepared for people they hadn't met. They acted on faith that the distress was real. And that is what compassion looks like in motion. What moves me most about the Carpathia was they did not sail towards certainty. They sailed towards chaos. They had to navigate past the same iceberg that the Titanic had hit in complete darkness. Captain Rawson said that he wanted the devil himself to fear the heat of our engines. And he meant it. And when they arrived, the Titanic was gone. The ocean was filled with lifeboats. The water temperature was arguably around 28 degrees Fahrenheit. And people were in shock, hypothermic. Some were hysterical. Some were shell-shocked. And some had just watched their families disappear into the sea. The Carpathia crew pulled 705 survivors aboard. 705 human beings who would not have lived through that night without someone choosing to respond. 705 bloodlines that exist today because one man made the right decision and countless others supported him in that courage. And here's why that matters for us, right? I'm going to bring it back. The Carpathia didn't know the outcome when they turned the wheel. They didn't know how many would survive. They did not know whether they would be in time. They didn't know whether they would encounter ice and sink themselves. They didn't know if they were going to blow an engine out. They didn't know if the ship was going to rattle itself apart. They simply knew that there was a call for help. And they went. Period. And this is where the metaphor moves from history into your own life and the application. Because depression is a sinking ship, grief is a sinking ship. Your loved ones that are depressed or going through grief, they are taking on water. They are going to drown. Grief can feel like freezing. Addiction isolates people into lifeboats all on their own. And oftentimes, the distress signals are not dramatic flares in the sky. They look like withdrawal, or I'm just tired, or humor that feels a little darker than normal. Someone canceling plans again. According to the World Health Organization, depression affects more than 280 million people globally. Suicide remains one of the leading causes of death worldwide, particularly among young adults. In the United States alone, recent CDC data shows over 49,000, not 100,000, 49,000 suicide deaths in a single year, the highest number ever recorded. This isn't a distant tragedy. That is lifeboats in the water. And here's the hard truth. Many people struggling with depression don't always say, "I need help," or that they do need help, rather. I'm sorry. Many will smile or show up or function. Just like the California misread the flares, we will too. We misread functioning as fine. And so the question becomes then, when the signals are ambiguous, who do you choose to be? The one that assumes it's nothing? The one who turns away? Or the one that says, hey man, I noticed you've been a little different lately. Is everything okay? Or, you're a little dark under the eyes, buddy. You're not sleeping good? Just a side question that is casting a line down to that boat. I think we misunderstand courage. We think it's dramatic. We think it's cinematic. We think it's these bold declarations and fearless personalities. But what the Carpathia showed us is that courage can look like responsibility, steady leadership. Can look like a captain quietly making decisions in the wee hours of the morning that will change hundreds of lives. There's a form of psychological inertia that keeps people from intervening. Social psychologists call it the bystander effect. When responsibility is diffused among many people, each individual feels less personal obligation to act. In large groups, action slows down, and in ambiguous situations, people will freeze. In heavy circumstances, people rationalize. But the Carpathia did not have the luxury of diffusion. The captain understood that if he didn't move, no one else was going. They radioed the other ships and got no response. They knew they were standing alone. And in your life, sometimes that is true. Sometimes you are the closest ship. Sometimes you're the only one who sees the change in someone's demeanor or in their voice. Sometimes you're the person that notices the silence. That doesn't mean you're responsible for saving everyone. It does mean that when you see something, you have a choice. You can move closer, or you can stay where it's comfortable. But I want to remind you of an old sailor's adage. The ocean will not take a ship that is moving to help or aid another. We're going to take a quick break, and I will be right back, and we will get into what it costs to show up. Because we talk about this like heroism is grand, and this is the, just chef's kiss of what humans are capable of. But that had repercussions and consequences. So stick with us, we will be right back, and then we will get into the nitty-gritty of what it costs for us to show up.
Do you want to become a host? Start your own podcast to inspire, persuade, and influence others on what you're passionate about? At the Transformation Network, we can help make your talk radio dreams happen. Let's take your hopes, dreams, and passions and put them on air today. Email us at host@transformationtalkradio.com to learn more about becoming a host of your very own show.
Are you ready to embrace life's greatest truth, that it ends? Without fear, life, death, and everything in between, with Death Doula Alexis Hughes is your safe space to explore mortality without stigma. From heartfelt conversations and practical tools to personal insights on grief, healing, and living fully, this podcast breaks down the barriers surrounding death. Tune in on Transformation Talk Radio and start turning fear into understanding. Visit withoutfeardoula.com to learn more.
Right? Let's not romanticize this because showing up costs something. The Carpathia's boilers were pushed hard to the point of destruction. The crew worked without rest, risking their own lives. Their schedule was disrupted. The passengers' voyages changed course entirely. They were going to be late getting off that boat. Compassion isn't free. Emotionally, all of this costs energy. That's why they call it emotional labor. It costs time, vulnerability. It sometimes costs the illusion of staying neutral. which I think is what most people are afraid of. And when you check on someone who is struggling, you're stepping into uncertainty. You might hear something heavy, you might not know how to fix it, you may feel your own fear surface. But here's something that I've learned from working at the bedside of the dying. The presence of another human being, even without solutions, changes outcomes. Changes whether someone feels alone, changes whether someone feels seen, changes whether someone feels like their distress mattered. The Carpathia did not undo the Titanic sinking, but it did change the story for 705 people. And in life, that is often the scale of impact available to us. We do not rewrite history. We show up inside it and on the right side of it. I'm going to let that sit there for a second. On the right side of it. As we close into this season, I'm not asking you to be heroic. I'm asking you to be attentive, to slow down enough to notice, to trust your intuition when something feels off, to risk awkwardness in order to offer presence. And sometimes that's gonna look like asking twice, or sitting in silence, or admitting you don't know what to say, but refusing to disappear. Sometimes it looks like turning your own ship around when you realize someone near you is taking on water. We live in a culture that values independence, productivity, and emotional containment, but humans survive because of each other. The Carpathia reminds us of that. It reminds us that distance is not an excuse, that inconvenience is not an excuse, uncertainty also not an excuse. When someone sends up a flare, you do not need a guarantee of success to respond. You need willingness. There's another side to the story. Sometimes you're not the Carpathia. Sometimes you're the one in the lifeboat. Sometimes you are the one shivering, the one exhausted, the one who's been treading water longer than anyone knows. And here's something we don't talk about enough. It takes a lot of courage to send up a flare. It takes courage to say, I'm not okay. I'm more tired than I let on. I don't think I can keep swimming. I can't do this anymore. And many people would rather sink quietly than inconvenience someone. Many people would rather joke than admit they're drowning. And they're terrified that if they light the flame, no one's gonna come. Here's the truth. The Carpathia wouldn't have turned around if no signal had been sent. Reaching out isn't weakness. It is participation in your own survival. If you are in a season where the water feels cold and endless, your only job is not to rescue yourself. Your only job is to stay afloat long enough that someone can see you and help you. Wave, signal, text that friend, call a therapist, show up at a group support, sit in the room and say the hard sentence. You don't have to be the strongest swimmer. You just have to let someone see you struggling. And if you are listening to this and in the dark right now, wondering if anyone would come, yeah, there are plenty of ships that are going to turn from you. And you can always DM me. I'm here. And it's literally my job, my honor, and my pleasure. And what the Carpathia did wasn't just an act of rescue. It was a declaration of values. It said, we do not sail past the suffering. We do not calculate worthiness before we respond. We do not require certainty to extend compassion. And imagine if we really built a culture like that. A culture where checking on someone twice is normal, where awkward conversations are welcome, where productivity doesn't outrank humanity, where we assume distress might be real, and where we move first and debate later. We often talk about legacy in this space and about dying seen, about living without regret and becoming bold enough to risk the fall. Go back to our Icarus episode for that. But perhaps the simplest legacy we leave is whether we showed up. Did we answer when it was inconvenient? Did we come when it was uncomfortable? Did we choose connection over detachment? Captain Rostron didn't know that history would remember him. He simply did what was required of a human being in a moment of crisis. And that is the invitation. Not to greatness, not to perfection, and not to heroism. Just movement, presence, and answering. Because somewhere in a dark stretch of someone else's life, in their darkest night, with no moon and no stars, just endless night and endless ocean, your willingness to show up might become the light they see on the horizon. Imagine being in one of those lifeboats. You're freezing, you're exhausted, you're watching the horizon. And in the distance, you see light. Small, first, then clearer, and closer. Captain Ralston had the crew purposefully hang extra lights on the sideboards and begin shooting flares so the Titanic passengers knew someone was coming, so they wouldn't give up hope, so they would hold on. Hope. That is what the Carpathia became in that moment. Light in the distance, hope moving towards you. And every single one of us has the capacity to be that for someone else. Maybe not all the time, maybe not perfectly, but intentionally. And as we end this year of conversation about death, grief, courage, regret, humor, and hope, I want to leave you with this. You do not have to save the whole ocean. You just have to be willing to act when you see someone drowning. You will not always know the right words. You will not always arrive in time to change everything. But you might change something. And sometimes something is the difference between despair and survival, between isolation and connection, between sinking and being pulled into a lifeboat. And when you see the flares in your own life this year, I hope you turn. I hope you trust that showing up imperfectly is better than not showing up and regretting it. And I hope when you are the one in the dark water someday, that someone sees your light and answers. Until next time, and until I make my triumphant return, I'm Alexis Hughes. This has been Without Fear, Life, Death, and Everything in Between. Check in on me and my shenanigans at withoutfeardoula.com. I'm going to show you guys that I now have the birthing of the Carpathia on my collarbone. And now you know why. And may we all become the kind of people who show up. Until next time. Be a light in the darkness, and be hope.
I'm Death Doula Alexis Hughes, and you've been listening to Without Fear, Life, Death, and Everything in Between. Join me every third Monday, 3:30 p.m. Pacific, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard, on Transformation Talk Radio for honest conversations about life's final chapter. Together, we'll break down barriers around mortality and empower you with practical tools to start meaningful conversations with your loved ones about end-of-life wishes. To learn more about end-of-life support and my work as a death doula, visit withoutfeardoula.com. Thanks for listening.